Okay, everyone's sitting down roughly now. And for this evening's talk, I always like pushing the envelope a little bit, going on new ground, as one of those movies or other TV shows which I remember seeing as a young kid, Star Trek, said, to go where no monk has gone before. Or really to say, to boldly go where no monk has gone before. And this came as one of those requests. Can Ajahn Brahm please talk about this subject or that subject? And when I got this request, I thought, I can't talk about that. But then I thought, why did I react so negatively towards this? Let's talk about it, because I've never talked about this before. Buddhism and alien abductions. Why are you laughing? Because that's one of the first things when I reacted the same. This is stupid, you can't talk about this stuff, that's crazy stuff. But then there's so much else which I've known in life which I thought was crazy, and later on in life realized maybe it's not as crazy as I thought. And why is it that some people actually experience weird stuff and no one believes them? Because we don't respect people who see things in a totally different way than we see things. And one of the most important parts of this talk is, please, out of respect for each other, don't just dismiss a person's ideas, concepts, or descriptions of this universe just because it doesn't fit in with one's own conceptual framework, because it challenges you, because it takes you out of your comfort zone. That's disrespectful. And if that's ever happened to you, you've had a weird, strange experience, or you see things in a different way and other people just don't believe you, that really is disgusting. It's a terrible feeling that you're not respected at all, that your experience and views on the world are just dismissed out of hand by others. And I think that we should have a greater degree of tolerance, because when you look at other things which we believe in this world, personally, I haven't really said much about this, but being a monk for 40 years, I've seen some weird stuff in my life. You know, weird stuff which is not supposed to exist, but you see it with your own eyes, and especially living in the jungles in Thailand a long time ago. Things which, you know, they're not supposed to exist. You know, huge serpents, snakes. And I mentioned one snake which I saw in a little book once, but it's unbelievable that something that big could exist. And this was, it's interesting that these about two or three times when I was staying in Thailand, you were sensitive enough, maybe because you were meditating, to realize that something weird was going on. You know, like electricity in the air, just feeling that something's up. And this one time I was walking back after a meditation, middle of the afternoon, something was up in the forest, the jungle, there was something happening. And of course turned a corner and saw this big black snake across the path. Could not see its head, could not see its tail. But the path was about a meter and a half wide, because on either side was bush, dense bush, so you couldn't see. But just because when I was trained as a scientist, I saw it was moving. It was moving quite fast, and so I judged its length by just how many path widths went across. And it was about seven or eight path widths until I saw its tail. And I quickly multiplied that by 1.5. It's about 12, 30 meter snake, at least. That's a big serpent. And of course, when you see these things, you're never afraid. You're almost like a sense of awe that such a thing could actually exist in the wild. Of course, you look in the books and no snake that big existed, but you saw it. Or one of the other weird times when I was staying in the far north of Thailand, very close to the Burmese border, so a very thick jungle up in the mountains. And one afternoon, you could feel the same phenomenon, something was happening outside. And you went outside and saw just thousands of birds in the sky all at the same time. And they were following these two enormous birds. I've seen eagles before. I remember just walking in Norway and just coming across a king eagle when I was walking alone in the mountains. And the king eagle, king's eagle I think it's called, you know, it was sitting down. It was big as, you know, you are, you know, sitting down. A huge animal. And as soon as I saw it and it saw me, I turned around very quickly. And went, that could do you a lot of damage. It's a huge animal. And it's amazing to be able to witness such an incredible, majestic creature in nature. But these were bigger than king eagles. Never seen anything that big. There's a pair of them just flying over the jungle. And straight away you had, and all the other birds were up there too. Straight away you had the idea this was some sort of king and queen of the jungle, a king and queen bird. And I remember just the mythical birds called Garudas. They named the airline in Indonesia after that. This is mythical birds. Perhaps that was one of them. There are some really strange things happening in this world. I've never seen this, but my friends have seen this, and it's been recorded on TV cameras, and no one can explain why this happens, because one of my favorite monks, when I was a young monk, this monk called Ajahn Tate, he lived in a monastery called Himmak Pen on the banks of the Mekong River. And I know monks who've seen this themselves, it's true, and these are good monks who are now abbots of monasteries, you know, up in England. And every year, only on one day of the year, which is the full moon day of October, which marks the end of the retreat period for the monastic community. And it's the Pawarana day, you know, the Poya day, the big Poya day for Sri Lankans in October. One day of the year, it's the only day this happens. In the middle of the night, they have fireballs come out of the Mekong River. These balls of light, like fireworks, which come up and explode above the river. And it's happening for years, and no one ever can understand why this happens. Only one day of the year, no other days of the year, always on the full moon day, which marks the end of the rains retreat. And this monk, who was a great monk, you know, when I first went to Thailand, he had cancer, and, you know, he's a great disciple of Ajahn Mun. A great sort of Thai meditating monk had cancer, no one could fix it, and so they told him, say, terminal, nothing we can do anymore, so he said, I'll go back to my monastery to die. And about 25 years later, he finally died. You know, one of those sorts of monks, you know, just indestructible. You know, just let the doctors do their job because, you know, give them a chance, but, you know, he's got other ways of dealing with these things. And this type of monk, very great monk, and he was also the monk which I had the great fortune of seeing a few times. And actually, he even came here to Perth many years ago, this Ajahn Tate, a long time ago. But anyway, that when I went to see him, I'm just straying off the point here, but it's a wonderful story because I love telling it, because I remember just the bliss of this occasion. I went to see him to have questions to ask about meditation, about Buddhism, about life. He's a very wise monk. But he was that famous, you had to make an appointment, even as a monk. So I waited for my time to go in to see him. And when I went in to see him, just all my questions, they just vanished, they evaporated. I had no questions left. I felt this incredible peace. And the feeling I felt was one of the first times in my life I was totally accepted for who I was. I didn't need to be any different. I didn't need to be perfect. Because I must admit, when you go in to see these great monks, and they do read your minds, and that's one of the things you've seen. It happens. Okay, mind reading is real. And of course, I wasn't really ready to have my mind read at this stage. And I'd be very embarrassed if he read it, especially if he told other people what I was thinking about. But as soon as I went in there, I felt so safe that this was a person who would not harm me at all, who would never do anything to hurt me. You felt this incredible sense of basically unconditional love and compassion. And all I felt at the time was, I'm not going to sit here, I don't want to move. They're going to have to drag me out, I'm going to die here. Because it was one of the first times in your life you felt so accepted by another human being. Even much more so than my mother and father. They weren't there to train you. They weren't there to change you. They weren't there to improve you. You were just accepted. And that gave total peace and happiness like I never felt before. And I didn't want to go anywhere. And I didn't have any questions. I couldn't think what to say. And so they kicked me out. No questions. Get out. Ooh, that really hurt. But it's actually afterwards that this, about 6 months later, when I was talking to a monk about this, he came up with this simile, which I thought was a very neat simile. I haven't said this one for years. About every human being has invisible spikes coming out of them. Okay, now you don't have to believe this. This is just a metaphor, okay? Yes, exactly. Everyone, you're totally accepted. These things happen, make mistakes. So people have got invisible spikes coming out of them, and some people have got so many spikes, and they're so long and they're so sharp. These are the people you never want to be around. You know, you're sitting in a place or sitting on a bus or in the street, and they come close to you, you feel scratched, you feel really uncomfortable. The long, spiky people. And there's, you know, most people, you know, you've got spikes on you, but, you know, they're not that long. But you come too close, and you'll get scratched. And there are some people who've only got tiny spikes. You can get very close to them, you can tease them, and, you know, you don't get scratched at all. But you go really close, and then you're going to get scratched. But there are some people, and they're so rare in this world, who've got no spikes on them at all. There's no way they will ever harm you. And they've only got your best interest, and you feel just so safe, so accepted, that you feel at peace with yourself. You find out at long last there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to be improved. You're good enough. Because somebody who you really respect is telling you this. And that's such a beautiful, beautiful experience, which I will always remember. But where was I going with this one? I forget why I mentioned this, Mike, in the first place. But, you know, we did... that's right, Hanyu's River. This is Mekong River, just where he lived. Have these fireballs come out every year. Totally, there's no reason for that at all. No one can find out why, but it's real. There are some magical things which you see. And there's also other magical things which you see in your meditation which are just can blow your mind. It's not what you expect, but it's real. And so sometimes when you mention sort of alien abductions, please never ever think, oh, crazy stuff, it can't exist. The reason I mention this is because who knows? It's certainly outside of my experience. I've never been sort of abducted. If I was abducted, I'd do experiments on the aliens. Maybe they're too afraid of me and my powers, which is why they leave me alone. But who knows? Maybe it does exist. Certainly the idea of aliens is nothing alien to Buddhism. I think apparently Ajahn Sujata gave a talk on aliens not so long ago in Buddhism. It's one of those religions which accept there's so many different beings in this universe and there's so much we don't know about this universe. And even like good scientists know that. A plug for our conference, you know, the global conference, one of the fellows who's coming is a good friend of mine. We were at Cambridge together. He was the very first Buddhist I ever met. And he also happened to be a theoretical physicist. He was a good mate of Stephen Hawking's. And he was also a member of the Psychic Research Society, which I was also a member of. You know, because I thought, you know, let's investigate these phenomena. And so we'd actually go and, I know we did some experiments on astral travel, you know, when he was a student, I was a student, go ghost hunting, because, you know, in UK, it's a great place to go ghost hunting because there's so many ghosts around. Let's go and find one and see if it's really real. Who knows? And you know, sometimes people say, ghosts, they don't exist. You may say that until you actually see one. And if you actually see one, you realize, what is going on? This is real. And it's not imagining, it's happening. There's one of the guys who used to come here, he's over in the Philippines now, he's a really good mate. And he was a pest exterminator, but you know, everything, he's a really good Buddhist, apart from exterminating the pests. Yeah, you've got to get, it's only a couple of bad bricks in the wall. But he said he went to one of his mate's house. It's a great story, and you know, this was absolutely true. Went to one of his mate's houses over in, he was Scottish, and this guy, his mate was English. And he'd come out from UK with his mate, these two English guys. And so, you know, they weren't gay, they were just two guys, you know, trying to find their way in the world. So they came and hired a house somewhere in Canning Vale. And the two mates together, one of the mates as soon as he came out here, he got cancer. And nothing they could really do. But, you know, this guy was what they call larrikin, always playing practical jokes. And he said, okay, when I die, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to still play practical jokes on you. And he did. And so this house had this ghost who was always playing practical jokes. Even to the point, this guy went to work one day, the guy who survived, the friend who survived, and all this furniture from the front room was in the garden when he came back to work. And he said, oh, it's him again. And so this guy, the Scottish guy who was visiting, they were talking about this, and he said, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. I said, really? Well, I'll see if I can get him to do something for you. And they're just having coffee on the coffee table, and there was a pot plant there. And immediately when, you know, the English guy, who was a friend of the ghost, said, oh, come on, do something, show this guy that you're real, a leaf broke off from the plant, flew horizontally, and then vertically down, and landed half on the coffee table, half off, just balanced perfectly. And that was spooky, so that was just a blast of wind. And as soon as he said that, another leaf fell off, went horizontally, and went down perfectly on top of the second leaf. This was getting a bit spooky. But, you know, when you don't believe something, you know, alien abduction, you've got to actually see an alien over there coming to abduct you before you actually believe in it. And this was the case with him, with ghosts. He said, oh, this is not real. And of course, the third leaf broke off horizontally and went straight down on top of the other two leaves, perfectly on top. At which point, he didn't argue anymore. He got up and ran to his car and just ran away as fast as he could. Why? It's only having a bit of fun and games with you, these ghosts. They're not doing anything bad or harmful, but sometimes that we refuse to admit that some of the weird stuff which exists in this universe. And part of coming here is actually to see some of the... expand your knowledge, not just be told what you already know, but see things in a wider perspective. Because look, that's one of the great things which I learned from science. And I'm going to back this up with science now, because people think Ajahn Brahm is going a bit loopy. You know, he's having too much condensed milk. We've got to sort of crack down on his diet. He's losing it. But I was trained in Cambridge, theoretical physics. This was the hardest of the sciences. The toughest, the most logical, and the most rigorous, the most you had to sort of depend upon evidence and hard logic. And then some of the things which I heard there were even crazier than alien abductions. There are things like sort of the relativity theory. Things like time being bent by speed. The faster you go, the slower time travels. And it can't be the case, but it is true, proved time and time again. And to understand what I mean, you can go to the nearest star, which is Alpha Centauri, 4.37 light years away. And you can't travel faster than the speed of light. But you can get to Alpha Centauri in 10 minutes if you just get... solve a few technological problems, which are quite big. But physically, you can get there, even though it's such a long way away. And you can't travel past the speed of light, and it's 4.37 light years away. You can get there in 4 minutes if you want. Because when you really go fast, time starts to go strange, and it starts to warp. And even distances start to contract. It's not so far away when you really go fast. And that starts to bend your whole ideas of what time is, and even what space is. This world in which we live, we always think that if we didn't live in it, it would be the same anyway. No. When you get involved in life, you're part of life, you actually change life. And that was quantum physics, that's what that was doing to me. Showing that, no, this world is not just as you think it is. It is something far more strange than that. Weird. And I love telling people about Schrodinger's cat. Any vegetarians, you should leave right now because this is really cool. I know this. Where is he? We always say to say something nice about animals. Where is he today? Oh, he's not in the back. But anyway, this is something nasty about animals. I do apologize. But this is only a thought experiment, Schrodinger's cat. And this is basic science, which is weird. And this made me start to think and see things in totally different ways. This was when you put a cat in a box. And in the box, there is a cyanide capsule and in glass. And it will break if a cesium atom decays in a certain amount of time. It's a quantum process. And it's a 50-50 chance. And it is probability. No one can predict it. 50-50 chance that the cat gets poisoned and killed. And a 50-50 chance it survives. And they haven't opened the box yet. And the question is the cat alive or is the cat dead? And both are wrong. It is the third option which is the correct option. The cat is in the third state, neither alive nor dead. And that third state is a basic default state of our universe. Neither here nor there, the smear of probabilities before we make an observation. That is reality. And quantum science is not just some theory or myth. Every time you use a computer, that's a quantum effect. Every time you use any amplifier, like this one over here, it's quantum effect. The superconductor, not superconductor, the semiconductor effect is quantum. It works, it's real. This isn't just theory, even though it's hard to get your head around this. How can that actually happen? How can that be? But it's real. So what I learned from hard science is this world is far more strange than we could ever imagine. I mean really strange. And sometimes you ask scientists, how can you actually comprehend this? And they would tell me, we don't actually comprehend it, we just get used to it. We get familiar with it, but we never really fully understand its meaning because it's too strange. Now these are scientists, that's the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics for any scientists here, which is still very sort of the preferred. It always goes up and down every now and again. The alternative is multiple universes, which is even more weird. But now we go into hard sciences. What is taught in our universities, where professors who are highly respected individuals in society, who even actually go on government-funded panels, they believe in all this stuff. So compare that with someone who believes in alien abductions. Who's weirder? So what I was saying over there is sometimes that we just will not respect ideas. You know, when they just go beyond our comfort zone. And we need to actually to respect people. Because sometimes when a person comes up and they say they've got a pain in their body, and the doctor comes up and they can't find no cause of the pain, no source of the pain, they think you're imagining it, this you're a hypochondriac. Which now brings me up to my hypochondriac joke. I always have to put one joke in there somewhere. So there's this hypochondriac who went to see the doctor, again, his GP. And he said, I think I've got Ebola. He said, you haven't been to Africa? No, I haven't been to Africa, but you know, I feel I've got hot and I've got chills and stuff like that. He said, you haven't got Ebola, you're a hypochondriac. And the doctor really decided to give it to him. He said, look, I'm wasting my time with you. There's real patients outside here, really sick. I'm not going to treat you, stupid guy, ever again. Don't ever come into my surgery again. Get out straight away. You're crazy. You're mad. You need a psychiatrist, not a doctor. Get out of here. And then the doctor really overreacted. And this guy was just so shocked. You know, he staggered out of the surgery, stunned, and went straight across the road, got hit by a car and killed. And the doctor heard the sound of the crash, ran out, and realized he was responsible for this guy getting killed, and he had a heart attack and died as well. So because they died within seconds of each other, they got buried in a cemetery in adjacent lots. And the first night he was in his coffin, buried in the ground, he heard someone knocking on his coffin lid. And he opened the lid, and who was it? It was a hypochondriac. And said, "Doctor, doctor, have you got anything for worms?" Okay, there we go. I got that joke out of the way. But you know, how many times have you been sick and people don't believe you? How many times have you got a pain and the doctor says, "Oh, you're just imagining it"? That is totally disrespectful. It's bad doctors do that. These days, anyone who's really wise, who knows the psychology, whatever you say is respected. You feel that pain. You feel you got chills. You feel it. Your reality, whatever it is, needs to be respected. And we start for the healing process from there. Not telling you what you should have, but respecting what you do have and how you feel and your emotional state and your ideas of the world. Because when you are respected like that, that's the starting point. So when everybody comes up to you and said they feel really upset at what you said, say, "I don't say, I never said that." Doesn't matter what I said. The point is, what did they hear? And if that's what they heard, that is the problem, and that's where we start. So we don't try and defend ourselves when someone gets angry at us, or when they have an argument with us, or when they sort of, you know, say, "Well, I never said anything, I didn't mean that." It's quite true, you never said that, you never meant that, but that is what they heard, and that is really important. So what it is actually validating the other person's feelings and ideas of life. Other people's ideas of how they're feeling in their life and with their body, how the body is going. Because if you don't validate that, then straight away a person feels rejected, their cries for help or their request for assistance is rejected. And you've been there, I've been there, and it's a terrible feeling. You've got an experience which they don't understand. They have an idea which is outside of your comfort zone. Nevertheless, they need to be heard and understood and accepted. And part of my whole life is, you know, trying to expand the tolerance I have of other people's views and ideas and experiences. Because without that tolerance, there can never be any respect. And to be able to tolerate other people's weird ideas and what I think is misunderstandings, but I won't call it misunderstandings. It's their understandings. It differs from my understandings, but it's theirs. I'm not going to say it's wrong. I'm going to say it's theirs, and I accept that. And this is where I came from the idea of opening the door of your heart. Opening the door of your heart means totally opening it to another person, even their ideas and views, which are really strange and totally different from yours. Because I find it very hard sometimes, you know, in a position, I'm supposed to be a religious leader, to be able to understand other people who think totally different than I think. Totally different religions, which at first I thought were crazy. How on earth can you believe in that sort of rubbish? And then they said, "Yeah, we think the same about you, Ajahn Brahm." Now, you know what I mean when people actually argue with you? You know, you come to the Buddhist center, are you some crazy person? When are you going to shave your hair off? Do you have to be bald to be a Buddhist? And after a while, you know, you can understand that people think you're crazy. They certainly thought I was crazy many times, being a Buddhist. And I remember just going with I was visiting my cousin in Stoke-on-Trent in the Midlands once. And, you know, just visiting an old family friend. And as I was just visiting in the morning, we went for a walk, good exercise, on a Sunday morning. I didn't think many people would be out at that time. But there's actually quite a few people also walking their dogs. You know, my cousin was walking his monk. Same thing, really. And as we were walking, people were actually pointing at me and laughing. And I was getting a bit offended. You know, okay, you know, I'm a monk, okay. You may not agree with being a monk, but should have religious tolerance. This is, you know, UK, the modern age. Why are you just ridiculing me like that? And I started getting a bit offended because, you know, lots of people just looking at me and pointing and laughing their heads off at me. I was getting very upset until I finally realized the reason why. When I went past this big signpost, this big billboard, advertising the circus was in town. And I realized they thought I was one of the clowns. Dressed like this. And that was true. They thought it was a circus clown just having a walk in the morning. That was me, dressed in my robes and bald head. And once I realized that, I realized, oh, why do I get upset? I'm making people happy. So I let them laugh at me a bit more. But anyway, so people have got some really weird ideas. And so one of the nicest things about opening the door of your heart is accepting those other people's weird ideas and respecting them. And who knows, they could be true. How many times has something really weird happened to you, and it's just so hard to explain? Why is it that people don't believe each other? That's one of the nastiest things. You know, when your friends just don't believe you. Just like what happened after this is years ago when we had the bhikkhuni ordinations. Sometimes, you know, we told the friends I'd known for years, this is what we did, why we did it, but you weren't believed at all. And sometimes that really hurts when somebody you've known for a long time just, you know, thinks you're lying. Well, no, this is the truth. This is what happened. Because sometimes these statements people make, whether it's alien abductions or doing a bhikkhuni ordination for very good, beautiful reasons, if it doesn't fit into a person's narrow worldview, we get these terrible arguments, misunderstandings, anger, and this division between human beings. So it's wonderful if we can open the door of our heart and believe people. And believe if somebody comes up and says they've had an alien abduction, don't dismiss them straight away. You're crazy. Go and see a shrink. No. Give them some respect. Don't know why. But who knows? There's many things which I've seen which, you know, I can't really believe I've seen those. But it's worked. It's true. Maybe this is another one. I don't know, but at least give people respect. And if you give people respect and you understand, then, you know, there can be, well, what's the problem with that? I remember just an anecdote, you know, the early history of the United States. You know, before it had federation, every state was totally independent. And the state of Pennsylvania, that was actually a very advanced state, you know, by William Penn. He was, what was it called? One of the Quakers, yeah, one of the Quakers. And so very, very non-violent, very pacifist, very close to being a Buddhist. And, you know, in that particular time, they had all this problem about witchcraft, being the evil and the bad stuff. And so in many other of the jurisdictions in you know, the North America at the time, they were just going crazy with witch trials and burning them and hanging them and all this terrible stuff which was going on with witches. And so they had the first witch trial in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And because William Penny was the governor, the founder, he was also the judge. So had this lady was accused of being a witch. And I remember this was, you know, that time, that meant being burnt at the stake and, you know, terrible stuff. And so he just asked her, well, let's get down to the hub of these things. You know, are you a witch? He said, yes, I am. You know, do you fly around on broomsticks? She said, yes, I do. She's admitting guilt. And so this William Penn said, well, I can't see anything wrong with that. Case dismissed. You know, as long as you don't crash into steeples and stuff, you can fly around on a broomstick as much as you like. And that was it. She was dismissed. And there was no more problem with witchcraft in that state. Everyone else was going crazy. straight away, there was no more problems. Brilliant emotional intelligence. So someone comes along, we're being alien abducted. Fine. What's the problem? You know, sometimes I think, well, I'd like to go too. I'd be interested. Can you please take me along next time? So, is it alien abductions is the problem? Or is it, you know, is there any physical harm done? Can we look after the physical harm? If there are any physical harm, is there any trauma which we can help you with? You know, maybe just treat people with alien abductions the same way we'll treat people who are kidnapped or who are, you know, kidnapped by terrorists who have put in that Lindt cafe in Sydney for a few hours, having the same sort of traumatic experience about being confined by people you don't really know and are very scared of. Instead of just, you know, just saying it doesn't exist, let's admit it did exist for them. Maybe it was true. But whether it was true or was not true, there is a problem there. Let's look at the problem and sort that one out. And stop dismissing people's ideas of what life is. And have a broader mind, because the world is very strange and weird. And there's so many things which I don't know, we'll never know. But I accept that some of these things may happen. And so let's admit that, and let's, instead of just saying, oh, it didn't happen, let's treat the real problem. One, rejection, thinking that one is marginalized as crazy when one isn't. And secondly, just, well, you know, if there is any physical damage, let's heal the physical damage. Any emotional damage, let's heal the emotional damage. And that we can do. And that's a wonderful way of not rejecting people and having a far more tolerant attitude to things in this world. Because I know that sometimes the intolerance, this is the second part of the talk, because someone also asked, can you talk about tolerating the intolerable? And tolerating the intolerable, it's an oxymoron, obviously. You know, if it's intolerable, you can't tolerate it. But what they really mean is, can we actually expand sort of what we can tolerate, what we can't tolerate in this world? Because some of the times, you know, the things which, you know, I can't tolerate somebody who's just crazy person, they think, you know, who says alien abductions, they're not crazy. But, you know, how can we actually expand, you know, what we can accept in our world? Because if you've ever been rejected, you've been pushed outside, you know what it's like, you know, when people can't tolerate you. And that, again, it's a nasty feeling, and it's not a very wise thing to do. When you get pushed out of a group, of a relationship, of a family, why is that? They can't tolerate you, something you did, something you said. How can we stop the pain of that? And again, it's because we have to learn how to be more tolerant. Different ideas, different ways of looking at life, different sexual practices. Like, you know, I was always afraid of gays when I was young. I think maybe it's because there was one occasion I was hitchhiking as a still 17-year-old through Germany and got picked up by a gay guy, you know, who wanted to mess around with me, and I managed to get out of the car just in time. And you know what I did? As soon as I got out of the car, being English, I made myself a cup of tea. A wonderful tradition that whenever you get in trouble, ever traumatized, make yourself a cup of tea and drink that. But maybe that was because you're a bit afraid, because, you know, the guy was quite so aggressive, but, you know, managed to escape in time. But, you know, after a while, you know, please, Ajahn Brahm, tolerate a bit more, expand your horizons. Try and, even though I'm heterosexual and then not even homosexual, heterosexual, but not asexual, but what am I, the non-sexual, celibate, what do you call non-celibate? So weird sexual, anyway. Not having any sex at all. But, you know, to actually expand, you know, your ideas of what, you know, what you can tolerate, what you can expect. First of all, what you can tolerate, then what you can accept, and then what you can respect. Now, come to that point of respecting other people. And that took me a while to be able to respect something which I couldn't understand. But, you know, now I've got a lot of good friends who are gays. And hopefully, you know, you are respected to the max. And you're most welcome. And I'll protect you. And I was always very proud. I'll say this again. One of my great achievements in life, which I'll always remember, the great things which I did in life when I was supporting the gay community against, of all people, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who was rejecting him. I said, no, you can't do that. That's not Buddhism. You have to accept. And the local gay community here in Perth was so proud of me. I got my invitation to the Gay Pride Breakfast. I was very proud of that. And that's, you know, Giz Watson was there. She's a Buddhist, apparently. But anyway, when I went over there, that I gave a little, only a small speech, and saying, you think you guys are weird. You know, being gay is accepted in our society now, but being celibate is not. So I'm more weird than you are. And so I've always threatened this. One day, if you can actually make this happen, maybe we should do this. And have, like, a next gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, have a celibate float for celibates. Celebrate celibacy. Because that's one thing people think is unnatural. I've heard these experts say celibacy is unnatural. And if you're celibate, you end up having sex with kids, like the Catholic priests, and stuff like that. And that is just so awful and so wrong and so just judgmental. So have a greater tolerance and acceptance that, you know, people's sexuality, if they're not harming anybody else, certainly being celibate is not harming anybody, so what's the problem? Well, I just do remember once I was ordaining one young man as a novice, and his ex-girlfriend was just sitting over there, and she was just giving me such angry looks. What's Ajahn Brahm got that I haven't got? She was saying. So, okay, we were harming her by taking her boyfriend to be a monk, being celibate, but, you know, it's just those things happen. But you're not harming anybody, so why can't we tolerate celibacy? And if somebody has that as a free choice, why not allow it? Why can't we not allow other types of views in our community, as long as they're not harming other people? And mostly in Australia, as long as you're not harming other people, then why not? You can be a Muslim, you can be sort of a follower of the great white ram, whatever that is, as long as you're not harming sheep. So there should be no real problem at all. And this is the tolerance we have. But when it's harming others, obviously that's where we draw a line. And that's actually where we come across what we can't tolerate. When it's causing harm, say to children, or it's causing harm to other people. When, you know, you are, say, being brainwashed by some cult, and, you know, you are really sort of hurting the family. Those are areas which, again, we should not tolerate. And that's where we have our morality comes in. And that morality is very simple. You know, in Buddhism we have 5 precepts. But, you know, people find 5 precepts a bit too many. So, for those who can't have 5 precepts, we give you the 2 precepts. Very simple. And I love these 2 precepts. These were actually what the Buddha gave to his son, Rahula. And it just really gets to the heart of why we have precepts. And it was never doing anything which will hurt or harm another being. Number 1. And number 2, never doing anything which will hurt or harm yourself. The 2 precepts. And there's brilliant sort of wisdom there. Not doing anything which harms or hurts people. Or hurts or harms yourself. Because sometimes people think, well, I can do whatever I like to myself. I can take drugs and kill myself and have a bad lifestyle. Unfortunately, you can't, because that hurts me when I see people who are hurting themselves and harming themselves. And it hurts many other people who are kind and compassionate. There's people who think they have no friends, no one who loves them. There are many people who love you. People you've never met before, you've never seen before. You know, people like the monks, the nuns, the good people here. Of course you're loved and cared for, even though you don't know me. So, you know, you're hurting. It hurts me. Like it hurts you. You see somebody who's really sort of screwing up their life big time. It hurts us all. Therefore, never do anything which hurts yourself, because it hurts others to see you like that. So that's a basic morality. And sometimes when you see people just going against that morality big time, how can you tolerate that? You can tolerate that if there's nothing you can do. And so often in life that's the case. People get themselves into just really big messes. Sometimes they have wars, and why do we keep having wars? But if there's something you can do, then you give it everything you've got. But often in life there's nothing we can do at all. You tried, nothing you can do. That is when you have to tolerate the intolerable. There's nothing you can do for the time being. Maybe later on. Later on there may be an opportunity. Maybe later on there might be something you can do which is effective. Maybe later on there is an opportunity to speak to someone who is causing harm to themselves and get to them and tell them and teach them. It's like sometimes people have been asking me recently, they've got a mother or a father or someone in their family just always getting so angry at people. And this was last week somebody asked me this over in our monastery, where after the meal we give free counselling. There's no such thing as a free lunch for monks. So people ask me all these questions afterwards. And they were asking me, he said, "No, my father and my mum's husband is always getting really angry. What can I do?" And I said, "Well, look, last resort, get out your smartphone. Take a video of him when he's angry." And that's actually a very powerful little piece of advice. And then when he's relaxed, when he's in a good mood, show him the video, what he looks like and how he behaves when he's angry. Because that is using what we call mindfulness. Because when a person is angry, when they're misbehaving, they don't know what they're doing. They can't really see themselves because they're so enraged, they're basically drunk with anger. And if you could just take a video of them, and it's so easy to do on modern appliances, smartphones, take a video of them, later on show them, "Look, Dad, this is what you look like." It is a wake-up call because people just don't realize what they're like when they're enraged. And I told, if that doesn't work, then you can post it on YouTube. Let his friends see it, that'll embarrass him. But sometimes these are people ask me, innovative ways of trying to solve problems in life. And sometimes you don't know what to do. And when I was in Google recently, last February, I was amazed that even in a place like Google, a modern company, biggest company in the world, they still have gender discrimination. Female IT engineers get paid less than male engineers who do exactly the same work. Is that tolerable? In a company like Google, that's intolerable. So what are you going to do about it? Say, "Well, nothing we can do. Therefore, I have to tolerate it." No, there's something you can do. So I suggested to them. They haven't done it. They're sort of namby-pamby cream puffs, scaredy cats. I said, "All you guys who support gender equality, go to work on Monday morning wearing girls' clothes. Lipstick, the whole works. There's not enough girls working for Google, so I'll be a girl for the day." And that will certainly get a lot of press in California. And when it gets on the 6 o'clock news, maybe it'll embarrass the people on Google so much they maybe actually start to do something about it. Because sometimes embarrassment is one of the greatest ways of changing things. You're not tolerating the intolerable, you're actually doing something about it. And sometimes using just weird, strange, innovative things, innovative actions, is a great way of changing things and not tolerating the intolerable. And it comes to mind again, I forget if I told this story before, I think I told it somewhere recently. It was when I did go to the Gay Pride breakfast, there was this guy who was from Tasmania, the last state in Australia which made gay sex a crime. Consensual adult relations, two men, two women, was a crime in Tasmania. So what, you know what the gay lobby did in Tasmania? They tried to talk to the government to change the laws, and the government said, "Oh, you don't have to worry, we'll never prosecute you." And that's just so patronizing. And it's not really understanding, it's not accepting. This was a problem for people. It's not listening to them, it's rejecting them. It's like someone who says they've been abducted and not listening to them. That is their reality. It could be true, it could not be true, I don't know, but at least respect it. And the government wasn't respecting it, so they decided to do something about it. And what they did, I thought, was really, really innovative. And it was worked. And what they did, they got about 20 or 30 couples, maybe even more than that, I think 40 or 50 couples, gay couples. And they all agreed to have a lot of sex one night and keep a record of it. You know, write down everything they did in lurid, raunchy detail. And the following morning, with the press in tow, they handed themselves in to the police. Confess, we committed a crime. This is what we did, so you have to arrest us. And the police had no choice. The police can't decide, you know, who to arrest. Who not. If someone confesses they've broken the law, they have to be arrested. So these 50 gay couples were put in prison for a couple of nights. Royal press. And within another 2 days, the Tasmanian state government held a special meeting and abolished the law. That was affirmative action. That is actually, instead of just sitting there and tolerating the intolerable, find a good way of embarrassing people to make it change. Otherwise, these things keep on going again and again and again. So, if there's nothing you can do, then you have to do nothing. But don't just sit there, find a way. There's always a way of trying to do something. Was it the other little example, which was a great innovative example? This was happened in the River Thames. I grew up in London. 1951 I was born, and I still remember walking along that river as a young boy and seeing all these signs on the side of the towpath and the other paths next to the river. If you fall in, ring this number, the ambulance will come and take you to hospital straight away. Because it was so polluted. Now, if you fell in, it was dangerous. I mean, literally, there's so many poisons and chemicals in that river. It was disgusting. And the government solved the problem so easily. They passed a simple law that any factory, any business which was using water from that river for their business, their inlet pipe had to be 1 meter downstream of their outlet pipe. Their outlet pipe, all the muck they put into the water, had to be 1 meter upstream of their inlet. So whatever they put into that river, they got back first of all. And that's all it took, a simple, great rule like that. And the Thames was cleaned up in a couple of years. And now, you know, you can swim in it. You know, there's fish in it. There's all sorts of good stuff in it now. And just a simple, innovative way of solving problems. So, yeah, it's, you know, intolerable for a while. But when it's intolerable, that is where we use our innovation, see things in a different way. And there are these great solutions. You know, the ecological damage to that river was reversed so quickly with a simple rule. No need for taxes, no need for fining people. Just, this is a law, whatever you bung in, whatever rubbish you bung in, you get first back into your factory. And it was clean afterwards. Great little innovative ways. So yeah, whenever we come across any problem, alien abductions, any sort of discrimination, anything which is happening, please find innovative ways. But please respect there's a problem there. Don't think, ah, you're just overreacting. Ah, no, it's not a real thing. Ah, no. No, please, respect it. What people say is a problem. How they feel. Their personal truth needs to be respected. And work from there. And then there's always so many innovative ways. But if we just reject other people's ideas, other people's ways of looking at things, other people's experiences, which may be weird and wonderful, but we need to open the door of our heart to things which is way out of our comfort zone, way out beyond our own experience, way beyond our own understanding of things. As long as it's not harming another person, harming themselves, it should be tolerated. And if it is intolerable, find an innovative way of solving the problem. And there are heaps of innovative ways. Thank you for listening. Very good. Okay, so this has been broadcast all over the world and also to Mars and to Alpha Centauri. So see if we've got any response here from any aliens. Oh, you've got Stephen from Question Mark. And we've got someone from USA and someone from Iceland. It's really nice. We've got all these different people actually listening to this talk. But the first one has only got from Question Mark. But it must be because that must be from outer space. Why is it that people believe you when you say you cannot see things and disbelieve you when you can see things? Because when you can't see things, you can't disprove that. I always say Loch Ness Monster. Because apparently, you see, I was actually on Google, the 81st anniversary of that photo of the Loch Ness Monster. That famous photo, the only photo ever been taken of the Loch Ness Monster. And they've looked and looked and looked in that lake with sonar and submarines. They still haven't been able to find the Loch Ness Monster. Does that mean it doesn't exist? Or does it just mean it's hiding? You can't prove that something doesn't exist. All you can say is you haven't found it yet. So that's one of the things. But when you can see things, they can disprove that. But again, why don't people believe you when you say you do see things? Because what you see, maybe it was real. Or maybe when you understand exactly what you did see, you saw a ghost or you saw something. Maybe it wasn't really a ghost. There was, I remember one of, have you ever seen a UFO? You know, Ajahn Bhamali, you know, who comes here and gives talks. He told me one day that he was looking up in the sky and he saw this, and he saw it really clearly, this like line just go across the sky. It wasn't a star, you know, it was, I don't know how many sort of degrees, a white line just float across the sky. And he thought, wow, it's a UFO or something. And until we looked in the newspapers the next day, many people in Perth saw it. I think one of the space shuttle was towing something else on this line, which was about 3 or 4 kilometers long, and the line broke. And that's many people saw it. It was just like a metal line, a cable, sorry, that's what, a cable about 3 or 4 kilometers long they had up in outer space, which broke, and you can see it just going across the sky. He was really disappointed. The one time he thought, I saw a UFO, and it wasn't. But, you know, when you see things, it could be real. So a lot of people have seen like balls of light over in Bodhinyana Monastery, Jhana Grove. Somebody saw one the other day, middle of the day. Shouldn't exist. It's not ball lightning. Didn't have the meteorological conditions for that. Weird things. I don't know if you've ever seen a weird thing, but many people have, and they're not crazy at all. So this is the thing, this is a problem there, that people, whenever you say things which challenges them, challenges their belief systems, of course they will argue with you, which is one of the reasons why as Buddhists, and I know Buddhists, as is anybody, we should have a tolerance. And if someone says they've actually seen that, maybe it's true. Obviously, you know, if they do have the disease of schizophrenia, then, of course, that's their reality. They're seeing those things. That needs to be dealt with, but you don't take that as a reality, but it's their reality. Anyway, Ajahn spoke about teenagers being aliens. Did I? Well, that was their reality, so I better believe them. How do parents protect their teenagers? Okay, this is very good. Ajahn spoke about teenagers being aliens. How do parents protect their teenagers from being abducted by social media? It is destroying. Because they're aliens to, you know, the family. Yeah, social media, it's a tough one. Because I never got into social media. And actually, I've got a Facebook page, but I've never even seen it. Someone else started it for me, and I don't know what goes on in there. I'm a bit scared of looking at it. I don't know what it's all about. But anyway, have social media. Fair enough, it might work. But there was a conference over in the United States last year. A couple of people from here went to it. Now, the big IT conference in Silicon Valley, and it was titled Disconnect to Connect. Very brilliant title, because everybody was understanding that if you have too much time on the mobile phone, on the tablet, on social media, you're actually not connecting with yourself, with your friends, and with reality. You're in this technological bubble. And so one way is actually send them off to a place like Jhana Grove. Because in Jhana Grove, we've got terrible internet connection. And it's on purpose. There is a big tower close by, but apparently, we're halfway between, we're on the way from the tower to Karnak Prison Farm. And they've actually blocked off the direction of the prison, so the prisoners can't get up to any mischief with internet. And so, we're getting a benefit from that. We're in a dark black zone. We can't get internet there. So send your kids to Jhana Grove. They can bring their tablets and their mobile phones. They won't get anything. And so they have to start connecting with reality, with the real people. And also, I like to say, when anybody comes to our monastery or goes on a retreat, you take off your shoes and socks and feel the ground. Feel the earth. Take off the jumper and feel the cold. Take off the sun hat, for a few minutes, and feel the sun. Take off, take down the umbrella and get wet. Feel the world. Because you see how protected we are? We always have umbrellas and hats and coats. We don't actually feel life anymore. Let yourself get bitten by a mosquito. There's hardly any chance of getting dengue fever at Bodhinyana Monastery. It's all Buddhist, so all of the mosquitoes they're not all vegetarian, I was going to say. They do eat you. But just feel life instead of always protecting yourself all the time. Mosquito repellent, sun repellent. We wear life repellent. So we don't ever know anything. So it's great actually connecting with real life and listening to the birds instead of listening to a recording of them. And watching a sunset rather than just seeing a video of one. And when you can start to do that, you realize just how incredibly energizing and real it is when you stop going into the media. So how to protect the teenagers from being abducted by social media is actually see if you can expose them to real life, to real people, to real weather, to real cold. And then maybe that's a good way. Have sort of little retreats like that. It's brilliant. People enjoy it so much. Anyway, next one, Faulkner from Iceland. Mum thinks that monks' minds were abducted by aliens, making them live in an austere seclusion. How is monasticism in the middle way? This is so wonderful, being a monk. This is not austere. I don't have any worries about wives and screaming kids. I don't have any worries about paying off the mortgage and the loans and going to work on a Monday morning and having to work all day with a terrible boss. I don't have to worry about, my pension and superannuation, health insurance. All those worries you have, that's really ascetic. That's really, I don't know how you handle that. I just really admire you. You managed to last so long in a world like that with all those worries and difficulties and problems and stuff. You just, wow. I don't know how you can tolerate it. So really, the monk's life is an easy life. You don't have any worries at all. We're going to get fed the next morning. We don't have to worry about even cooking it. We don't even have to wash the dishes. It's really weird. I shouldn't let you know this, but I think this is really incredible. People come all the way from Perth cooking us really delicious food. And they go, many of you do this, you go all the way to a monastery, an hour, and you go there and you give us the food and you also give a donation for the privilege of feeding us, and then you wash up afterwards. Really good deal. Imagine you did that. Sitting at home and people come and they feed you and they give you a donation for the privilege of feeding you. Really looking at it that way, wow, this is really good. But there's more to it than that, obviously. But look, you know, I've got a choice. I don't have to be a monk. We weren't abducted by... If we were abducted by aliens, those aliens were really smart, and I really encourage you to be abducted as well, because it's a really great life and great fun life. Look, do I look like I'm living in a harsh life? Honestly, look at this. Does this look like austerity? This is my answer to the mum in Iceland. Austere? This is a really nice life. No worries. And I go to travel around the world and I go to all nights. Next, not tomorrow, Saturday week, I'm going to Thailand to teach a retreat. You go to all these really cool places like Google and apparently Triple J next week. How many of you can get to go on Triple J? Monks can. We can meet all these incredible, interesting people and stuff. Well, it's really great being a monk. You travel around the world, go and see these incredible people, meet the Queen of England like I did some time ago, and all the prime ministers and presidents. You get to go into all these incredible places. Wow! And monks and nuns, you all can all get to do that. It's a wonderful job. So come on, volunteer. This is great. Do you really want to just go to work 9 to 5 for the rest of your life? And crikey, and when you sort of get old, you just get put in an old people's home. Is that where you really want to go in your end? Is that really what you want in your life? Go to a monk in monastery. You get looked after from the time you're there until the time you die. Really get looked after. A nice, beautiful place out in the countryside. Look, I've got my country estate down at, and I've got my city, my townhouse here in Perth. Well, wonderful life. So, no, I don't think this is austere. And it's seclusion. It's nice to be away from things sometimes. So it's not seclusion. It's happiness. It's bliss. And it's not aliens. I was abducted by the Buddha, and thank you so much. I will never forget that wonderful thing. So, anyway, those are some answers to the questions here. Any questions here? Okay, yeah, from here. So going on a bit.
Asking a question from the position of someone who has been abducted by aliens.
Very good.
What would your advice be? Because I'm part of a group of 40 that all have also experienced the
same
thing.
Okay, yeah, good.
The two biggest things that we have all a desire to let go of is the desire to be accepted by the greater community.
Yeah.
And the fear, dread, terror kind of fear that we sometimes experience at night time when we worry that it might be about to happen or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if you could talk about how to let go of those two things.
Well, hopefully the first one, giving a talk like this might start. Have you accepted? Because, look, please excuse me, but does that look like a crazy lady at all? You know, would you actually know that that was sort of a person? Because you're an ordinary human being. You're respected. You know, you're not a fruitcake. And this is what people keep on thinking. Anyone who's weird or strange, being a monk that I was abducted by aliens, that's the only way I can live an austere life. No, respect people. And so thank you for saying that. An ordinary human being, maybe people you live next door to, have those experiences. So we validate that. Accept that. And now just how can we get rid of the unpleasant part of it, which is now the fear. And, you know, that's where we need your help. First of all, to be accepted and never think crazy, because too many people have been marginalized because they think they were crazy. People like fighting for the rights of, say, one race. You're crazy. You know, we all know that black people are inferior. That's what they used to say. We all know that, you know, if you're gay, it can be just treated with medicine and you'll be okay afterwards. You can be cured. And this is just disgusting. And now we do that to somebody, you know, a group who's have been abducted. So, first of all, we should stop the stigma, stop the discrimination and accept. And be kind. Have some compassion. That's number one. Number two is... Go.
My question from the... Yeah. How do you let go of the desire to be accepted? And
don't let that
go. Doesn't just apply to, you know, abductees. It applies to a lot of people.
No, don't let that go.
You don't let
that go. That is intolerable. Do not tolerate it. But it take a time. In other words, it's great what you've just done. It's wonderful to actually just get up and stand up and stay. You know, this is me. This is us. You know, let yourself be known, and let people realize, you know, you aren't fruitcakes. You know, you're respectable, good human beings who need to be accepted like everybody else. So once, you know, you never give up that hope. Always work. It's a long journey. Like the gay community, it's a very, very long journey to get accepted. In many countries, they're still not accepted. It's still a journey to be made, to be walked. It was a long journey for people like Mandela and Luther King. But they made that journey, and they keep on with that journey. And if it's not in your lifetime, be for other people's lifetimes. So please don't give that up. But number two, just how to once it's accepted, then you know, maybe these other parts of fear and the negativity of, or the pain or the difficulty of these experiences, maybe they somehow can find ways of overcoming those. Because I don't know. You know, why is it that sometimes some people get abducted, some people don't? Why? You know, find that out. And then maybe there may be some possibility of protection. So, you know, so you don't be afraid, for goodness sake. Bad enough for life as it is without these other fears which come up. So thank you for coming out. And that's a word. Yeah, very good. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, very good. Let's pay respects to Buddha Dhamma. Oh, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then we can finish on. Oh, was there a question in the back? Oh, there's the animal guy. Yeah, sorry.
You mentioned about the precept of not harming any other being.
Yeah, including animals. Yeah.
Yeah, that's would that translate to not killing them to eat them or torturing them to take their milk or eggs?
If you can, as best as possible, we try and increase that. So, especially, I was just thinking the other day of using animals in experiments. That is totally unnecessary. So certainly we can ease off the exploitation of animals.
So therefore, would Buddhism be against the meat, egg and dairy industry then?
Can't say that, no. I wouldn't go that far. We're trying to lessen it.
But would they be for the promoting abstinence of...
Promoting abstinence, yeah. So encouraging abstinence as best we possibly can within our own limitations.
Cheers.
So that's you know, what we can do. Very good. Okay. So let's go. So I was looking for you earlier, but I didn't see you in the back there. So sorry about that. Okay, so let's pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi suvākkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghaṃ namāmi.